This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Hurting Code, being recorded again on June 13th at NDC. This guest is Dominique Bayo, who is an expert at identity and access control. I'm sure you know him. He works with ThinkTecture. Is that right? You just gave a talk on securing web API?
Yeah, so I just did a talk on web API security, which was like a mixture of what we have in version 1 and what will come in version 2 in a few months' time. And so one part was basically talking about the architecture and the pipeline, because many things change in the next version, how you would implement security. But much more interesting, I guess, is how you build actual applications on top of that pipeline. So we went through a number of scenarios. So I call one scenario the same domain scenario, where the client and the web API live in the same domain, like Ajax callbacks or the spa thing. Where you have a different set of challenges than you have when you're spreading out on different servers. Mm. So, for example, spa applications have this thing called cross-site request forgery. So, because it's cookie-based authentication, you know, cookies can cookie gets sent automatically by a browser. So, even like a different tab in your browser could make a request to the other page, and the cookie would be sent automatically, and you have to guard against that. And there's some stuff built into a web API. Some stuff is part of the templates. Mm-hmm. So that's one part. So, and I guess the story is that Microsoft wants to make people move away from cookie-based authentication, because it's a tough problem to solve, really. Mm. Yeah. So in the next version of the web API, we will use token-based authentication, which is much better. Yeah.
Tokens in cookies, or in...
Well, cookies are tokens, but when we say token-based authentication, we typically mean something that goes on the authorization header in an HTTP request. So the idea is basically that you're writing an application, the user signs in with some credential, and you get back a token in return, and then the client can forget the credential, yeah? I mean, especially thinking about mobile applications, you don't want to store that credential on the mobile device. You don't want people to force to type it in every time they are using the application. So you get the token, you can store the token. That might be a short-lived token, might be a long-lived token, might be a short-lived token that allows you to get new tokens. Mm. Yeah, that's there are certain concepts here.
But it could be a persistent token?
Yeah, I mean, for example, Google gives you like a 2-week token, yeah? And then after 2 weeks, they force you to sign in again. Mm. So that's their compromise between, you know, productivity and security, for example, yeah? Mm-hmm. And then you use a token instead of a cookie, yeah? Mm-hmm. And that brings us all in this domain of cross-domain applications, where the client lives in a separate domain than the service. Mm-hmm. That might be JavaScript calling to a third-party service. That might be a native application calling into that API. Mm-hmm. So they are cross-domain applications.
Like JSONP type calls.
Well, JSONP was a way to get around the limitations of browsers, yeah? Right. Because doing GET requests, yeah?
Right.
You shouldn't do that, really, yeah? Newer browsers have a thing called CORS, the cross-origin request resource sharing thing, and actually Microsoft just took our code and moved it into System.web. So we had this thing called ThinkTecture Identity Model, and my good friend Brock Allen was doing the implementation of CORS, and Microsoft liked it so much that they said, do a pull request, and we move it into System.web. And now the next version of Web API will have more or less our code. It's been changed to make it more consistent with the rest of the APIs, but yeah, that's what happened. And the other thing is, when you go cross-domain and you want to do this token-based thing, that what you typically need is a so-called security token service. That's a separate infrastructure component. Mm-hmm. And that might not be the thing you want to start with, because, you know, it's a steep learning curve, maybe. So the next important thing in the next version of Web API is that they have a built-in token endpoint. So the Web API itself can have a token endpoint where you can request tokens from, and it uses the same protocols as you would use if you would have a separate token. So at some point, you can just split them apart.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing I released today is actually, when you split it apart, that's the server piece that you need to make that stuff happen. It's called authorization server.
Okay.
It's on GitHub. It's an open source project. And this gives you like management features, like you can register clients. Like you have your web client, your iOS client, your Android client, your JavaScript client. Mm-hmm. They can use different types of authentication methods. You can all lock that down in the UI. You can say, here's an application. This application does user management, and I can define permissions like read user data, write user data, delete user data. And then you can put all these things together, and then what typically happens is you open this consent screen saying, hey, do you want to allow the iOS client to access the data on your behalf? And it tries to read and update, and you can say yes or no, and that resides in a token. And from that point on, the application can use the token as data.
Wow. So this is not just some headless HTTP API. No. HTTP API. No. It's actually something you can manage through.
The management is a web API itself.
Yes.
Yeah, but we also provide a UI for that. Yeah.
Wow.
As people start working with APIs more, this is becoming a bigger problem, the cross-origin resource sharing stuff. So I've been working on this exactly for the last 2 weeks. And so what people have been doing with these APIs is breaking their services out into specific domains. So for instance, I was just on a site where they had login.whateverdomain.com. And then you go to store.whateverdomain. So all of these are becoming individual services. But when you start, as you said before, doing get and post and all these JSON requests, oh man, you walk into a problem. And so you have two elements in it, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that so people understand it a bit more. You have a cores issue that you have to do on the server, saying who can call me and talk to me, and you also have to deal with the cross-domain requests in the browser and what's allowed by default. So right now, I am neck deep in IE9 and IE8 problems, and I'm trying so badly to get around it. And I don't know what to do, because these people keep saying your site's not working. So talk about that.
Yeah. I hate to say that, it's not working.
Thanks.
So
I gotta go now.
So the way this works actually is this, yeah? So when your JavaScript code does a cross-origin request, the browser, which has to have an implementation of that protocol cores, he first sends an options request to the actual resource saying, hey, I have this code coming from origin 1. It likes to do a post request on this endpoint. And by the way, it will send you a header and these request headers, these response headers, and all kinds of things, yeah? And what you need to have is kind of a logic in your web API saying, okay, I allow origin 1 to call me using a post, using these headers, and it's pretty complex, yeah? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. You have two parts. One is the server implementation that is now in the box in the next version of the web API, yeah? And you have the client implementation, and that obviously, as always, when you're running in a browser, depends on the browser. And Chrome and Firefox has pretty good implementations. IE10, I think, has as well, but all below IE10 doesn't.
So people out there will be dealing with this, especially, I think, the Microsoft developers who are trying to implement this kind of thing in the enterprise. And by default, you know, with IE8 and IE9, they come locked down, you know, the medium trust level, I believe is what you call it, right? Or you have to walk through trusted sites and you have to lower the... Is there any way around this at all, or are you just stuck?
Well, I mean... How customers are solving that is typically either by using JSONP, which is exactly the technique that gets you around that, but you're limited to GET requests. So if you want to live the REST lifestyle thing, you want to have GET, PUT, POST, DELETE, PATCH, and so on, then you're limited to GET, which is an architectural problem often, yeah? And the other one is, as you said, put them in the same domain, which gives you another set of problems. So yeah, I guess we are still in an early stage when it comes to these technologies, yeah?
Yeah, and just to add, this is not Microsoft or anything specific. Aside from the IE8 part, everyone has these issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So you were talking earlier about the security token service. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think people listening and myself we're used to some things like we're used to hearing about like OpenID and OpenAuth and different when we talk about these kind of federated things. How does security token service fit into that? Is it an implementation of a specific protocol or multiple protocols or what are we doing?
So the term security token service is a general term, a thing that produces security tokens. Yeah. So the open source project I released today is called Authorization Server, and that's actually a term coming from the OAuth spec. So what authorization server really is an implementation of OAuth. For people that did a more OAuth work know that OAuth is kind of a hot debated topic right now. Yeah, there are many people saying that's good, many people say it's really bad. The problem is that the lead editor of the spec just stomped off the room and said, I want my name removed from all specifications, and had a very, very popular presentation last year where he said that it's really bad. Yeah.
And he released a counter spec, right?
Well, actually, the problem isn't trivial to solve. And he started releasing other stuff, but they're in really early stages right now. Yeah. So I don't agree with him. I mean, I agree with him that the spec has problems, but they are all solvable. And he wasn't interested anymore in solutions at that point. He just wanted to make a really loud, shout out. Yeah. And
it seemed like to distill way down what he was saying, that there are different interests coming into this. There's the enterprise interest, right? And then there are also the web developers who kind of come into this more with like, look, I just want to open up my service to my customers, or I just want my website to be able to hit a service.
Right.
And I don't want to get into all this enterprise stuff. That's not my problem. Does that sound like a good description of it? So how is that solved?
Well, I think OAuth was the victim of its popularity. Yeah, when they started with OAuth 1, they solved a very specific problem. And then people realized, oh, that's working. And, you know, then they went to the IETF and tried to make a standard out of that. And then, you know, all the big companies came in, Google, Microsoft, I mean, Facebook, you know, all they came in and said, like, oh, well, but in our scenario, it would be better if it would work like this. Or a little bit like that. Yeah? And
that's what they did to OpenID. You know, I mean, OpenID was a neat spec as implemented.
I would even compare it to WStar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the WStar specifications. That's what happened there. Yeah, I mean, and then I guess what mostly kind of tripped him off is that once they had their interests in the spec, they left the committee.
Yeah.
And had him finish up the whole work. Yeah. So, but he basically left 3 months before the last revision. And whenever I go to customers, they say, like, well, but we Googled for OAuth, and it seems like it's not a good idea to do it, yeah? And I said, well, you have to understand what it is. And I think it's a set of patterns. What they really wrote down are a set of patterns and not a specification anymore. And actually, they had to rename it from specification to framework in the end. So just to, you know, make sure that you can't implement this thing word by word. It's more like, if you want to do this, then that would be the approach. Yeah.
So how did you implement?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, yeah. I took what I think are the sensible parts. So for example, a concrete example would be, how does a client, and a client in OAuth speak is a piece of software. It's not the user, yeah. I mean, that was one of the really important things that OAuth brought to the table, that users are the humans and clients are the piece of software they are using to access the data on behalf of the user, yeah. So a client has to authenticate to get a token. Okay. And by default, they say a client should use the authorization header to send his credential to the server. And then they say, but he may also put it in a query string, or he may use other means of authorization. Yeah. And if you would start implementing every of these options, yeah, then you would end up with an insecure implementation. Yeah. So what I did for the I'm actually doing an OAuth talk at 3 o'clock today. Mm-hmm. Like,
so sorry. Insecure because of a bigger
attack surface.
Attack surface.
Oh yeah,
right.
It's okay. A huge attack surface. Yeah. If you would implement all variations of what, yeah. So what I did is, you know, these specs are written in the terms of should, may, must, yeah, these things. So I searched for the word may, and I got 69 hits. Okay. And that was one of the main points of critique from Aaron. Yeah, he said, like, well, this is something that it's not a guideline how to implement these things anymore. It's prose or almost. Yeah, you read like a story and, you know, make up your own mind about it. Yeah. So what I think what should really, really happen, and that's what I've been vocal about on my blog as well, they should come up with a basic profile where, like, a minimum requirement, do it exactly like this and you will succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not right now. That's missing.
Right. And you've been very clear that OAuth 2 is not about authentication or establishing identity. So if I want to use the ThinkTecture project and I'm writing different sort of client applications, what would you suggest I do to look for authentication, assuming I'm writing, you know, a bunch of web API stuff?
So the way we designed it is that it's completely decoupled from how you authenticate the user. Mm-hmm. It's an MVC4 project, right? I mean, you can add a form to it with a login if you like to. You can, when you download it, it comes by default with WIF enabled, so you can connect with any WIF enabled identity provider. That could be our ThinkTecture identity server, that could be ADFS, that could be Azure AD, that could be the access control service, connecting to Facebook accounts. Doesn't matter, yeah? When we enter my server, I need one single claim, and that's the so-called subject claim that describes who the user is. Mm-hmm. And everything else is up to you, really.
And then the token that gets sent out, the authorization token, is that the return?
One
that,
access token,
that's
yeah.
what I go. That's where I go into the UI and I say, you know, this person, this identity should be able to read this and write this. And...
Not the identity, the client.
Right, okay,
yeah?
Right.
It's about the software.
It's very subtle, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the user has an account anyways. Otherwise, he wouldn't come to that stage where he can say, release a token, yeah? But it's about the client, yeah? So think of a Twitter client, yeah? Where they say, like, you know, Twitter has this one backend, but many, many clients, yeah? Mm-hmm. So what they did is, in the beginning, they had an endpoint where you could send the Twitter username and password, and then you got back, you know, a token. Now, suddenly, there were all these homegrown implementations of Twitter clients that stored these passwords on client devices in clear text. Yeah? So they're like, we don't want that. we want that you only type in the password address with their website. Mm-hmm. Okay? Right. So they use OAuth for that. So basically you open the app opens an app view, you come to Twitter's login screen, you type in, you say authorize application, and then the application gets back a token, mm-hmm. and from that point on it uses the token to access Twitter.
So that's a really key point, right? The whole thing about the password, like you are, it's always tokens. As far as your application is concerned, you're always being tokens. Because I was working with on something recently, and they're like, well, what if somebody gets this token? What does that mean? You know, and the token only is granted to a specific service and for a specific amount of time. And so it really limits the kind of damage that can be done with, right?
A token basically binds four things together: the client, the human, the application, and the permissions. Oh, and time. Right? So these five things come together, and if something doesn't match, it would be rejected by the recipient, right? And the other good point to bring up here is that with that concept, you only have to support a single authentication method, that is tokens, right? And not tokens and passwords and client certificates and Windows accounts, because that is outsourced, if you like, to this server, to the token service. Yeah? And now Microsoft just released the JSON Web Token Handler last week, which is very, very important piece of infrastructure. That's the thing that can validate these tokens, the JSON Web Tokens, which is the new standard.
Okay, that's a NuGet that you can pull into a web API? Yeah.
Well, it's not only for web API. You can use it wherever you want. Yeah, you can use it in MVC, in WCF, in web API. It's basically just a piece of code that takes this token from the wire and turns it into a principle.
So it's an HTTP module, maybe?
No, it's just a class. That's it. And you can couple that with an HTTP module. Yes. You can couple it with a web API message handler, if you like, or this open middleware.
Run in a console app, right? It's not
It's really, the simplicity is quite nice because it's basically just a JSON encoded string that is base64 encoded, so you can ship it around.
Yep.
Yeah. And has a signal.
Yes. And I think I interrupted you earlier. You're going to say what you were talking about later today.
I'm doing an OAuth talk.
An OAuth talk.
So exactly, because part of the reason is because I did this talk so many times at customers, like when they ask me, like, what do you think about OAuth? So, like, I go on for 1 hour, explaining what I think about it, yeah. So, I guess this time I will just record it here and give them the link. And yeah, that'll be, I guess, I collected all kinds of opinions and, you know, contrast them and add my opinion.
Okay. So if people want to try out this, is there some samples included?
Yes, all the samples I showed today. So in OAuth has so-called flows that describe how clients can connect to the server, like native clients, web clients, JavaScript-based client, and so on. So I did one sample for every flow. That's part of the GitHub repository.
Okay, good.
I had one thing I was wondering if you could go into a little more detail. You mentioned Windows Identity Foundation. Mm-hmm. You mentioned claims and stuff. And I just, you know, heard the discussion of, you know, we're moving away from roles into claims, right? And so what is the effect there? What does that actually mean?
Well, actually, the thing is, a role is a claim. Yeah, a role is just a very simple claim because it just has two answers, yes or no. So are you a member of that role? Yes or no. Whereas, for example, so let's say this authorization server needs to package the email address of Scott into the token so the recipient can read it and can write you an email. That would be a claim. Yeah, it has a type and a value. Yeah, email address would be the type and value would be your email address. Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas roles have a type, which is role, and the value would be yes or no. So claims are really just giving you more like a name value pair mindset than a list of string mindset, if you know, in .NET terms, C# terms. Yeah. So it's really nothing to be afraid of. It liberates your application. It makes you more expressive. Yeah. It's the way to go. And starting with .NET 4.5, every principle in .NET is based, it derives from claims principle.
Mm.
So, you know, actually Microsoft really is heavily investing in that. Kerberos in Windows Server 2012 is claims enabled. So yeah, that's the way to go.
Excellent.
How much do we need to know? How much does the average developer need to know about Windows Identity Foundation?
I don't think a lot. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the technologies are non-trivial, but the tooling gets better and better. So we have right now, we have the Identity and Access Control Wizard that plugs into Visual Studio. Last week at TechEd, we were previewing the next version of Visual Studio, which has all that security set up as part of the file new experience, for example. Yeah, I mean, Kerberos is a really complicated protocol, but people today only need one checkbox, enable Windows Integrated Authentication, right? So that's where we want to go to.
So you have a photo section on your blog that I think is pretty amazing, and there's a lot of the photos are black and white. What got you into this?
So the last 5 years I've been traveling to Iceland, and I collected a huge amount of photos, and I realized that when looking at them, Iceland is so colorful. That's the thing that when you first go there, like, it's so stunning that the colors are all over. It's a unique landscape, really. And then I bought so many photo books on Iceland, and they had excellent photos, yeah. The only thing I didn't find was a black and white book. So I took my favorite photos and converted it to black and white. I mean, not just converting them, but, you know, post-processing them in black and white, and found that they have their own little appeal.
Yeah.
So that's why I released them.
Do you see is there any relationship between programming and photography? Like...
For me, yes. For me, it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
Programming is all about, you know, there's one right way of doing things. There is in photography, as long as you like it, it's the right way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really take it as a counter, you know, like a distraction when I write in code, going out and, you know, just capturing whatever I think is, that's how it relates for me too.
Yeah. What's your favorite camera?
Well, I have a Canon 5D MK3 for the geeks out there. It's a so-called full format sensor. It's a great camera. It's a camera that works in almost any situation. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess almost every photographer's dream is a company called Leica, a German company. And they make really, really expensive cameras, and they're not as useful and as convenient as, you know, the big players DSLR cameras, but they render beautiful pictures.
Okay. Interesting. Well, anything coming up? Anything you want to tell people about?
I think I kind of did everything already. Yeah. So I did this workshop this week, which was a big thing for me.
Yep.
So we did 2 days on claims-based identity nexus control. And the last 4 weeks, I've been heads down writing authorization server to make it releasable today.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And obviously, it isn't done yet. So there's more work to do.
Yeah, I know you say on the GitHub page, please submit feedback.
So, yes.
Yeah, we'll put that in show notes. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.